Welcome back to another episode of Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler. On this podcast, we explore all things related to thriving and flourishing in life. There are three fundamental truths that inform not just my podcast, but my coaching as well. And they are, number one, the future can be changed. You are not stuck and you are not trapped by your predictable future. Wherever you are right now, it's just your present state. It does not determine where you can go in life. Fundamental truth number two, you can change your future. This might be the best news of all. You don't need to be rescued by someone else. You can do that for yourself. In other words, you can be your own hero. And fundamental truth number three, you do not have to wait. Too many people think that they have to have the perfect plan or all the knowledge or all the skills before they can get started. Nothing is further from the truth. I've coached a lot of people in my career. And trust me when I say that you can learn whatever it is that you need to learn along the way. The key is to start. If you've listened to the podcast before, you'll probably know that we find stories and experts who shed light on these different areas so that we can all flourish and thrive. Let's dive in to today's episode. What does a Division I athlete, a drug dealer, a husband, a pastor, a father, and founder of a coaching company have in common? At different times, they've all been adjectives for my guest today. His story is compelling and his passion for helping others is flat out infectious. His name is Kyle Sullivan, and I cannot wait for you to meet him. Kyle, thank you so much for joining me.
Absolutely, Bobby. I am really excited for this conversation.
Nice. And we were talking before we went live about the Tulsa / Joplin connection, you know?
Yeah. It's been in Tulsa for 9 years. It was when the tornado came through Joplin. I was interning at a church at that summer. And so got to do relief and it was wild.
That tornado was, I've never seen anything like that before in my life.
Yeah. It's a reason why that area is called Tornado Alley, I guess.
That's right. I remember right after it happened, I was there. My little sister was turning 40. And I remember driving around. I'm like, I should recognize this. Like I used to live on this street and I could not recognize where I was.
Wow.
Unreal. So we got the tornado connection, but yeah. Why don't we jump right in? Tell us a little bit about, you've got a really interesting story. So why don't you tell us about that?
I love when people intro like, so tell us about the craziness of your life. But grew up in Louisiana. If you or your listeners have heard of Duck Dynasty, that is my hometown. So, but your listeners can't see, I do not have the ability to grow a beard. So I'm already a little bit on the outskirts of that, but that is my hometown.
Yeah. You can't be on Duck Dynasty without a beard though, right?
Nope. Can't do that. So grew up there and really it was a, you know, simple upbringing. Dad worked. I was born when my dad was a senior in high school.
Oh, wow.
So my dad dropped out of high school, got his GED, started working. Yeah, that was life. And so, I mean, my dad worked multiple jobs. I was raised to be good, you know, good manners, all that, good Southern boy.
Oh, yeah.
Well, my dad got saved when I was in eighth grade and I started going to church. And I'll tell you, I hated it.
Really?
Couldn't stand it. Thought it was the most boring thing that I had ever been to. And if there's, when I share this, if any listeners from that church, I'm sorry, but it was boring.
You were in eighth grade.
I was in eighth grade. Right. Yeah. So I started going to church all the while I'm playing sports. My life growing up was sports, baseball and football. That was my thing. And so I get into middle school and that's still the case. I get into high school. And that is football turns into my life.
Wow.
So I get promoted. I get moved up to varsity my sophomore year. Well, that was a big deal because I'm like 15, 16. Now I'm hanging out with 18, 19-year-olds, seniors. And that was kind of the start of the destruction period of my life. Because I tell you, through my entire life, what I wanted more than anything was to be accepted.
Yeah.
I was like 5 foot nothing, about 270 pounds in middle school. I could give the Michelin man a run for his money.
Wow.
Which what that led to was a lot of bullying. And really, I say in my time, you just fought it out.
That's right.
Today, we couldn't do that. But we just went behind the backstop. And so I got in a lot of fights. I got in a lot of things in school. But all of it was underlying, I wanted to be accepted. And so when I started hanging around those guys that were older, I just went in Rome. Mm-hmm. So I started partying. I didn't want to look uncool, or I didn't want to look like I didn't fit in. And so I just did what every stereotypical jock does, and, you know, sports and school during the week. And I just wild out on the weekend.
Yeah.
And that just kind of slowly intensified in high school. And then I graduate high school, go to college, actually stop playing football because I'm like 5'7" and a half on a good day with the right amount of product in my hair. And I just couldn't cut it height wise at a D1 school.
Okay.
I wasn't quite good enough to do it. Anyway, so then I shifted through a series of events to be a cheerleader for the football team that I wanted to try out for.
Really?
Crazy. The strength
kind of cool, coach, though.
Yeah. So the strength coach was married to the cheerleading sponsor. I got connected that way, went through a month of practice. I had never done any of that before, but I was loud and energetic. And I was strong. Those were the requirements.
So why not?
To be a male cheerleader. But it was in that while I was doing that, I also pledged a fraternity. So your listeners can kind of see like, oh, he wants to be accepted. He started partying. He's in a fraternity. He joined, you know, cheerleading squad. So I'm doing all of this and partying's just intensifying.
Yeah.
Well, through connections in college, I get introduced to drugs. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, Bobby, I loved it.
Yeah.
Take a high energy guy like me and introduce him to things that amp up your energy. It was what I thought, a match made in heaven.
Wow.
Now, keep in mind, this whole time, I'm like going to church.
So you're still going to church while this is going on? So,
like eighth grade all the way through high school. And when I joked that I had a drug problem before I had a drug problem because my parents drug me to church. So until I moved out of their house, it was like, you live in this house, you go to church.
Yep.
And I just kind of did it as, okay, I want to stay here. I don't have the money to move yet. And so when I moved out, I moved into the fraternity house because I thought that would help me with my schoolwork. Anyway, that was a terrible idea. At least that's the thing I told my parents. So anyway, I start getting hooked.
Wow.
From the moment I tried, I mean, it was cocaine, it was crystal meth, ecstasy.
Like, oh my goodness.
I'm a 0 to 100 kind of guy anyway. So I just went with it. Went to where I was making deals and I was running drugs and I was doing all of this stuff for about like 2.5 years. All the while, I was working a job, I was going to class. Like the stereotypical, like, oh, you're just hooked on drugs and you can't function. And that was not my story.
No.
I was a fully functioning drug addict.
Wow.
And it all came to a crashing halt about October, fall of 2006, spring 2007. I get jumped at a drug deal.
And oh, boy.
If your listeners can imagine, look at their right hand. On the knuckle of my pinky and the knuckle of my index finger was me covering up my nose and my eye as I just got pounded.
Wow, man.
Get out of that. And I call the one guy that I liked from church at like 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And I said, he answered, by the grace of God.
Yeah.
That I need effing Jesus. I just didn't agree with anything.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to let you get the E for expletive. You know, adult episode here. But that's what I said. And that decision, that moment, that rock bottom moment is what I mean, it was the catalyst for everything.
Yeah.
So the next day I go, what do I do now? So I drop out of college. I move out of the fraternity house. I get connected with a group of guys that basically are my detox. They're going to church. They play in a band, like playing worship music. And I just, that moment in the rest of my life to this point has been a series of my yes being on the table and being available and obedient to whatever the next assignment is for me.
Yeah.
And so that led me to be a pastor for 11 years. After I got I went back to school at a different university in a different state, Christian studies degree, went in, got my degree, started pastoring, and did that for 11 years until July of last year when I started my business. And all of it is, what do you want me to do, Lord?
Yeah.
I'm available. I'm obedient. You set the path. I'll take the steps.
Yeah. So, okay. So I got a couple questions for you. When you called the guy from the church, what did he say?
Okay, man, come over.
Really? That simple?
That simple. And he told me, well, I still talk to him. I talked to him a couple weeks ago. I think he's in his probably early 70s now.
Wow.
And he said, I knew that if God could get a hold of you, he goes, you were already leading people.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't to helpful behaviors.
Right.
Because I'm a huge extrovert. I didn't want to do anything by myself. And so it's funny how all of these seasons of life build to what I'm doing now, because what I didn't realize is I was learning early entrepreneurship, sales, marketing, advertising, the ability to lead people, managing conflict. Like, I joke now about all of the stuff that I do in my business. And for people, I'm like, the drug game actually prepared me for this.
I mean, not the course we'd want people to take.
No, not at all. But I recognize that, like, people try to wish away their past.
Oh, yeah.
And we try to, like, I got asked a question a couple weeks ago that I was doing another podcast interview. And they said, what would you change? Like, you got a crazy story, so I'm sure there's tons that you want to change. What would it be? I said, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't change one thing, because changing one thing changes everything.
Yeah.
And my thing is, what can I learn from the past and how can I apply it to the future? When I called my buddy, I said, I need effing Jesus. He said, okay, come on.
Yeah.
And he wasn't on staff at the church. He was super involved. And he just led me to Christ on his front porch in between me taking drags of a cigarette.
Yeah.
He said, if you could ever, I knew that if God got a hold of you and you actually allowed him to take control of your life,
mm-hmm.
you were going to go somewhere.
Yeah.
But I also knew that if you stayed resistant and closed off, you were also going to go somewhere.
There's not anywhere good.
The thing is, consistent behavior over time yields results.
Mm-hmm.
We decide if it's in the right or wrong direction.
Yeah. Wow. And when you said, when you're talking there, like not wishing away your past, right? What's happened has happened. You know, I think that we can spend a lot of time and energy trying to make it go away. So this is something, I mean, you freely share this, right? Did you freely share it when you were a pastor?
Uh-huh. Wow. Yeah. So I was a youth pastor.
Oh my goodness.
And what's really funny about this is because one of the things that our youth ministry would do is they bring people in to tell their testimony.
Yeah.
And so it's like, hey, this is where I was. This is where I'm at now with God. And I always found it like, how do y'all find the most jacked up, messed up people to talk to students, like to scare us to Jesus? Like, let's not do that. And so it was really funny when I became that person.
Yeah.
And I would always, my grandma is like, she's angelic. Every time, as long as I can remember, she had her Bible and a Beth Moore study open that, like, she's in her late 70s now, still taking people to church. Like, she's amazing.
Yeah.
And I would always tell her, oh, Nanny, I'm just building my testimony. Little did I know, I actually was.
You were.
And so I honestly didn't share. I didn't share my testimony or my story for probably about 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. Especially I moved I moved from Louisiana to Arkansas for college. That was probably the single best thing to that point in my life because it allowed me to create a new narrative. I was no longer called small town Louisiana.
That's right.
I thought I was slick and no one knew what I did. I was not.
Yeah.
And so even when I started going to church for myself and because I actually had an encounter with Jesus, people were like, we'll see how long this lasts.
They're waiting.
Oh, they were just waiting. Like, oh, he got super emotional, gotten into some trouble. And here's the deal. I don't discredit them. That's what happened to Paul in the Bible. Mm-hmm. And so when I moved to Arkansas, it was an ability for me to go, hey, I'm Kyle. I'm from Louisiana. I want to be a pastor. And that was all people knew.
Wow.
And I got to share. And so it probably took me a while before. I also think, Bobby, that it's important for us to share and show our scars, not share and show our wounds.
Interesting distinction.
Like, it's easier for me to say, hey, you see right here on my hand, these two places? Yeah, I got scars here. And let me tell you what happened and what was the cause of it and what produced it in me because of it.
Yeah.
If my arm was cut open and bleeding right now, I probably shouldn't be talking to you about it. I should go get help.
That's right. That's right.
Like, we would need to time out this and I need to go and we'll come back.
Yeah.
And so, but I think so often, especially in our culture today, people share too soon and they share from a various, they want, some may want attention. Some really may just like, I don't know what to do. So I'm just going to start talking and I just share and I share and I share. But I'm one that coaches and tries to model myself of, hey, let's share the scars of what we go through, not the wounds of what we're going through.
Yeah. What do you think the drawback is when people are sharing their wounds, when they share, you know, too soon?
People don't know how to handle that. Like there are a group of about six guys that, if we're using this analogy, are part of my operating team, but that's it. So these guys get the raw, uncut, unedited version of me when I'm going through stuff.
Yeah.
And me for them, but no one else gets that.
Yeah.
And so I think when we share too soon, one, we're inviting voices in that don't need to speak into this.
Yeah. We're still processing.
We're still processing it. And when, you know, again, I'm going to go back. My grandma's a theme of this. Like, don't have too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yep.
So you're trying to make the meal. And you got this person saying, oh, you should do this. Or you should try this thing. Or, oh, you need to read this book. Oh, you need to listen to this podcast. Oh, you need to be here. And you did. Well, what does that cause? It doesn't actually cause healing. It causes paralysis because you have so much information you don't know what to do with.
Yep.
So when we are able to have a small group, that's why they don't let your entire family into the operating room.
No, that'd be a disaster.
That would be a disaster. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what people are doing with their emotional and mental well-being in today's age. And so that's why I think it's important for you to have a small group of people that, man, they get it. They get it, good, bad, and the other. But then everybody else, they get to see the appropriate vulnerability and then the ultimate healing.
Yeah. On the other side of it. The other side of it. So I'm very curious about something. What led you to become a youth pastor?
I wanted to be a part of a youth ministry that didn't suck.
And that was it.
And because it's the ministry was doing what they felt called to do. It just didn't reach me. And so I wanted to create a ministry that reached me in middle school and high school.
Interesting.
So I went after jocks. I went after the athletes. I went at, like, we had, you know, before hanging out, we had soccer goals, basketball goals. We had footballs. We had athletic events out in the parking lot. I wanted to create an environment because I knew that if I could capture me.
Yeah.
In middle school and high school, then they would be the evangelizers on their campus. They would be the ones that would go and spread what is happening. Because I think I wanted it to be a place where it's like, man, I don't care if you love Jesus, don't love Jesus. I need you to be here, because if you hang out in this environment long enough, it's going to get you.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like it's a place to belong.
Right. One of the things I loved to say every time I was on stage as a youth pastor, for sure, and then periodically when I transitioned to more adults in the weekend stuff, is this is a place you can belong before you believe or behave.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we would have to police our campus, like our little church, because it's like, why are they? Hey, stop making out. Get over here. Like, yo, don't do that here. I mean, don't do it, period. But like, don't do it here.
Yeah.
You know, but what I loved is story after story after story of us setting a bar for these students to hit. And like, hey, look, I don't care if you believe in Jesus. I don't care if you want to like have anything to do with church, but you're here. And so when you're here, here's some things that we expect. Outside of that, have fun. We want you to be here.
We're good.
Yeah.
So is that one way that, you know, because you said that your whole life, what you wanted was acceptance.
Yep.
Were you trying to create that?
100%.
That's awesome.
100%. I just knew, and that's even part of like what I ultimately see with Unleash the Champ, is the ultimate vision is to be able to go into elementary, middle school, and high school students and high schools and teach leadership principles and create. Because if I had the knowledge, you know, everybody says this as they get older, if I had knew what I knew now and I was whatever, but it's so true. And so like my heart is to equip me in these stages of my life to go, hey, here's the right mindset to have. Hey, here's how to overcome adversity. Hey, here's the importance of grit. Hey, here's the importance of communication. Hey, here's the importance of standing up for yourself. Like, those are the things. Hey, this is how you unleash the champ.
Yeah.
And so absolutely, it is from a heart of going, man, I am grateful and I wouldn't change anything, but now I can go back and here's what I'm ultimately going to do.
Yeah, I love that. Tell us more about Unleash the Champ, your business.
So it was twofold. So when I told my wife, hey, I think God told me to quit my job in the middle of a pandemic with a 7.5-month-old.
Whoa.
Yeah. Why not? And my wife is amazing. And I call her the silent killer because she doesn't say a whole lot. But when she does, I'm like, where's my pen? And it may be that I just talk a whole lot. That could be it too. But she said, you know, I think you may be one of the last people to realize what you should be doing. Ma'am, I need you to run that back. And so I started Unleash the Champ with the heart of going, okay, I believe out of my 11 years of being a pastor, people of all ages, stages, wealth and health and all of it, the number one thing I saw Christians particularly is they didn't believe that there was the immeasurably more that it talks about in the Bible for them.
Wow.
Like, when we really think about the Bible and we read the words of Jesus when he says, hey, disciples, it's been real, but I got to go. But I'm going to send this helper called the Holy Spirit. And through him, you're going to do greater things than me. Jesus, you fed 5,000 with a Happy Meal and your mom got stressed out at a party and you turned her Dasani into a red wine. What do you actually mean by greater than you? And so my heart was again, no, you are a champion. And the pillars of Unleash the Champ are calling, your heart, your altitude, mindset, and performance. CHAMP.
Tell me those again. I got calling, heart, altitude.
Altitude, mindset, and performance.
Nice.
So with your calling, it's, man, what is the thing on planet Earth that you're created to do?
Yeah.
For me, I've realized this and put words to it almost 10 years ago. So my calling is to lead and develop people to discover and chase after their championship run. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't have that championship run. I just caught their ultimate vision. But now it's their championship run. That's what it is. My assignment has looked different. My assignment was a youth pastor. Then I was associate campus pastor and leading adults. And then I led volunteer teams and I led small groups. Now I run a business and I'm a father and I'm a husband. And my assignment and the hats I wear But that is my overarching calling. What is yours? Heart. I get the opportunity to work with really successful people that have conquered the professional game. However, the professional gain is at what sacrifice? Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, it's the relationships that are most important.
Yep. So many times.
I've not met very many executives, business owners that say, God, I wish I could have gone back. I wish that I could have blah, blah, blah. And it always ties back to some relationship, spouse, kids, parents, mm-hmm. something. So we work on that. Altitude, that's the ultimate vision. So one, I needed a word that started with A.
Well, let's be real with it.
Let's just say, hey, we're going to be hot.
It is what it is. And transparent
here. We're going to be hot. So I needed a word that started with A, but it was also like, but for me, it wasn't just like vision of sight, but it was also this idea that we are rising.
Yeah.
We got to get to the right altitude for the championship run that is inside of us. And so that is, man, what do you want? What do you want in life? Who do you want to become? What do you want to be? Like, you know, I'm talking about a foundation that in my mind is a couple decades down the road, but I see the altitude, but I know I got to do stuff now, but that's where I'm going. That's what I'm a part of. When I see books and podcasts and courses and certification, that's the altitude.
Yep.
So those three, you're calling.
That's exciting.
That's exciting.
Yeah, that's right. It's motivating.
You're calling, your heart, your altitude. And then none of that matters if you don't have it right between the ears.
Mm-hmm.
That's your mindset. One of my favorite quotes is by Mike Tyson. He said, everybody got a plan till they get hit in the mouth.
Yeah, that's right.
And when we get hit in the mouth, that's the first time that you're like, uh-huh. Do I like the taste of blood? And it all is about what is between our ears. Do we actually believe the stuff that we say? It's not enough just to look at your vision board or say some affirmations. By God, you got to believe it. Like Tony Robbins talks about incantations. It is an affirmation with energy. And so I love that.
Yeah.
And so it's getting our mindset right. It's breaking down those broken belief systems that do nothing but steal, kill, and destroy, like the Bible talks about. Mm-hmm. And it's reframing us into that immeasurably more life in that championship run.
Yeah.
And then all of those things, again, you got where you want, what do you want to do? You got your heart, you're getting all that in order. You got your altitude of where you ultimately want to go. You got everything right in the ears. Now you got to get to work.
Yeah.
That's the performance. And so Unleash Love the Champion, it. Very action-oriented, performance-based, heart-driven, kingdom-minded coaching.
Yeah.
And it's really exciting to be able to work with people who honestly, I mean, they're making hand and foot over what I am, but I'm not here to solve their business problems and their money problems. Mm-mm. And being able to be that I've been a pastor for 11 years, so many of them will not walk into their church and talk to their actual pastor.
Wow.
Because what do we do when success comes? We create the perception.
That's right.
How are things going? Everything's great. It's amazing. Business is great. Family's great. It's amazing. It's wonderful. It's whatever. But then you're sleeping in separate rooms at your house and your kids don't want to talk to you or return your phone calls.
Yeah.
And you said fitness is important, but you hadn't worked out in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's those things. And so going to your pastor who you view as a spiritual guidance and leader and saying, so everything's not as awesome as I say.
Yeah. It's not as good.
It takes a level of humility, but what I get to do is go, hey, like, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just put it on the table.
That's right.
Because we are only as strong as we are honest.
Yep. And I think that is one of the great things about being a coach, right? That's why they always talk about it. Science, the neuroscience is really clear on this. The single most important thing is how much you trust the person who's coaching you. Because if you don't trust that person, you're never going to be vulnerable. And if you can't be vulnerable, nothing's going to change.
Yep, exactly. Come on.
I mean, yeah. Okay, so I've got a question for you. Of those five, because I love those, which one do you think is hardest for people?
Heart.
Heart.
Yeah. especially the folks that I get to work with, because it's the one that they've probably neglected the longest.
Oh, okay.
Because I know my wife and I just celebrated 8 years of marriage. And at year three, when I was on my rise in ministry, one night we're having spaghetti. I'm in bites. Oh, babe, this is great. This is awesome. I love this. Thank you. Hey, I feel like we're roommates.
That's what your wife said?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And I, you want to run that back? What do you mean? Look at all this stuff that's happening and all this. She's like, I don't care about all this.
Mm-hmm.
I just want you. And she will still say she doesn't believe I would have done this. I believe in my heart and I was prepared. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I said, you want me to quit?
Yeah.
I did not say till death do us part to the church and vocational ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Now she says, you were not going to do that. I said, you would have said yes. I would have. Now, what I've been doing, I have no clue.
That's no question.
But I would have been saving my marriage.
That's right.
And what it's caused for me, I didn't even tell her the first time I went to counseling. I had Fridays off. I went to a counselor I knew, and I said, I got to start working on stuff. What do you need to work on? No clue. Let's talk.
That's what I need your help for.
If I knew, I wouldn't be here. So I get it. But I think the hardest one is the heart, because it's one, taking care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's taking care of those around you, not apologizing for putting the relationships most important to you first.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I get looks all the time when I say this. I have a wife of 8 years, I have a 19-month-old daughter, and I have a baby boy that's going to be born in about 2.5 weeks.
Ooh.
The most important person in my life is me. Because what I learned through that about a year of counseling, that time,
yeah,
in it now, every week, but that time was I wasn't taking care of me.
Yep.
And people ask me, those close to me, oh, are you and Ginger going to marriage counseling? I said, no, I'm going to counseling. This is on me. This is not on her. Now, I believed that if I handled me, that relationship would get better.
Yeah.
Because I would be better.
Yeah.
And that was leading into 2018, where I pick a word, a focus for the year. I feel like God gives it to me. In that 2018, it was influence. And I thought, the Lord is going to do some amazing things. Bobby, I tell you, he said, I need you to influence 3,500 before 890. Now, let me tell you the significance. 3,500 is the number address to my house.
Mm.
890 was the number address to my church.
Wow.
And I said, well, heck, Jesus.
Yeah.
And so I think that is the biggest thing that people have to overcome is the heart piece of it. Because it's the most uncomfortable. It's the most ambiguous, but it's the most beneficial when you dial it in.
Yep. I think too, and you kind of alluded to this, there is this perception that if we choose ourselves, if we say we're going to take care of ourselves, we're going to put ourselves not necessarily first, but if you don't put yourself first, if you don't take care of yourself, you're not good for anybody. But there's that fear that we're going to be perceived as selfish or self-centered or whatever that might be. You know, we shouldn't be doing it is how it feels.
100%. And I think one of the things that I remind myself of and I remind my friends, clients, is no is a complete sentence.
That's right.
People don't get upset when yes is a complete sentence.
They don't.
Hey, can we do this? No. People will lean in and look at you like, but are you going to tell me why? No. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have a great day.
Yeah.
I have found that the thing that protects my heart the most is my ability to say no.
Yeah.
There's not very many things that at initial, the first question, hey, can you do this? Let me think about it. And I get back to them, you know, when I say I will, but I have found that when I say yes too quick, I typically go, I don't need to do that.
Mm-mm. No.
And now I believe we also train people how to treat us.
We're always training people how to treat us. always. I had a coach tell me that years ago, and I'm like, rats.
Yep.
I'm not training them the way, like, what am I doing?
Right.
You know, man, and saying no, that resonates so much. Years ago, oh my gosh, this was like 2003, 2004. I wrote this short article on saying no gracefully, because it's one of the hardest things for people to do. And yet it is absolutely essential, because we're always saying no to something. So if we say yes to something that we really don't want to say yes to, we just said no to ourselves or to our spouse or our kids, whatever that might be. But we don't think about it that way, you know, not at all. Wow. Okay. So on your LinkedIn profile, and I know I shared this with you when I reached out, one of the things I loved, okay, you said the two most important days in a person's life is when they're born and when they discover why. Does that relate to the calling that we're talking about here?
That's all of it.
Wow. I love that.
That's all of it. And I think it was originally Mark Twain that said that.
Oh, I think it might have been.
Yeah, I think. And yeah, because it's what, you know, I also heard it said, you know, there's two dates on the tombstone.
Mm.
The dash is what's important.
That's right.
And so, you know, for me, I know when I was born.
Yeah.
And I know why.
Mm-hmm.
And there's certain things that cannot get into the world unless I do them.
Hmm. That's a great way to think about it.
And that has been the journey of exploration. And yeah, I talk about like unlocking the cages in our life. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about that.
And so for me, that was a cage, is you got to start this thing, your comfort, your security, your every 2 week, you got that financial affirmation of a salary, which is real nice. But it's a cage. It's a comfortable cage. It's a nice cage. It's an influential cage. It's a cage nonetheless. And so when you discover why, you can't do anything but go after it.
Yeah. So when you said, you know, because I think you said unlocking that, this isn't something I read, unlocking the cages that you've willingly walked into. Mm-hmm. So what are some other examples of those cages?
It's the parent said you should be a doctor, so that's why you're a doctor.
Yep.
It's the, hey, you know, I'm the fourth generation teacher. Mm-hmm. I don't really like it, but I guess I should do it. Or it's, hey, you know, everybody said you should be with this person, but y'all ain't got nothing in common and y'all don't like each other and you're more roommates than soulmates.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, we kind of rushed into having kids. We weren't really ready, but like, and so some of those can be cages.
Yeah.
Now, they can be blessings. They can be amazing cages. I'm not saying you need to end your relationships and ship off your kids.
Mm-mm.
But there are so many times where even how we dress or how we talk or what we listen to or what we watch or what we listen to, like all of it, is if it's not by our design, it can easily be a cage that we willingly walk into. You know, I talk about a lot. I am always fascinated when I go to a zoo.
Really?
I love them. I love going to zoos and I love going to aquariums. Fun fact. It tells me so much about leadership, particularly I always at a zoo, if I don't see any other animal, I got to see the lion. Here's why. I'm assuming you've been to a zoo before.
Oh, yeah.
What is the lion not doing?
Trying to get out.
It's sitting on a rock.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at everybody. Why? Because it knows when it's going to get fed.
Mm.
It knows where the water is. It knows where its mate is. It knows that this rock isn't going to move. There's no danger. Nothing's trying to get it. So the king of the jungle has been turned into a little kitty at the zoo. Now, I've never been to an African safari. It's on my bucket list because I want to see a lion in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
I've watched a lot of documentaries. National Geographic is great. They are not still creatures.
No.
They're constantly moving. Their whole pack is moving. They are constantly roaming. Let somebody come into the pack. Hear me roar. That's the cage that people get into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I think about that. And I also think about the great white shark. So did you know that if you put a great white baby shark in a personal aquarium, it will never outgrow the size of the aquarium.
No way.
Yep. Listeners can Google it. It will get about 8 to 12 inches long.
Man. Hmm. So what's that say to you?
It's time to break the glass and unlock the cage.
Yeah. What immediately came to mind is we grow to the limitation of the cage.
Hello.
You know,
our environment is the single biggest indicator of our success.
Man, great word pictures with both of those, you know. Okay, and you've mentioned this a couple times. What do you mean by championship run? I want to make sure I ask that.
Yeah. So I believe the championship run is the dash in between the dates on our tubes.
Yeah.
So for me, everything is sports related.
Love it.
And at the beginning of every season, every team and every sport and every division and every level gets together and says, all right, we have a championship to win.
Yep.
If we do this, this, and this, we will put ourselves in the best possible situation to win the championship. What is the championship to you? What do you want your marriage to look like? What do you want your relationship with your kids to look like? What do you want your business to look like? What do you want your health and wealth and personal life and all friendships? Each of those has a championship run. It really is just the final destination of what you want to be known for, to become, to experience, and to be. That's the champ, and that's a championship run.
Nice. And now tell us a little bit more about, because this has been wonderful. So much good value. Tell us more about who you work with.
Yeah. So we're almost a year in to the business full time, which even that is a cage that I'm having to get out of.
Really?
Because I've been leading people for 11 years.
Oh, yeah.
I've led thousands of people and personally coached a couple thousand.
Yeah.
It's just been in the context of ministry. So your editors can chop this out if not, but it's a thing for me that I'm going, I got to stop saying that. Mm-hmm. Because it's a cage I willingly walk in to downplay myself.
That's right. Because you've been doing it, just different context.
So the people I get to work with are men and women in leadership roles that have conquered or are conquering the professional life. They have the money issue figured out, the things that they sacrificed to get the professional and the wealth success. That's what we work on. That is, it's nice. Their personal, relational, emotional, spiritual health. And the thing that is most impactful and the thing that every one of them figures out is that if you can get these in alignment, your bottom line will increase.
Yep.
Because you will be a better leader. Your team will be more motivated because they'll like being around you more.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be able to be clear. You'll make better decisions. You'll make better mergers. You'll make better whatever. And your teams won't be siloed. They'll have synergy. You won't be confused anymore. You'll be a champion. And then we unleashing the champ on everything.
Yep. Because it's all tied together.
All tied together. And it is the thing I love doing most in ministry. And that was helping people. Okay, here's where you're at. Here's where you want to go. Here's the plan. Now let's go work the plan.
Yeah. That is cool. That's really cool. And okay, final question. Before we get to how people can find you and all that kind of good stuff, where do you get your belief that everything is going to be great?
I don't know that I will say everything's going to be great. I'll say everything's going to be worth it.
Mm, okay.
Me doing coke wasn't great, but it was worth it. I needed to learn that. I needed what that was going to produce in me.
Mm, the experience.
The experience, the circumstances, the situations that I was put in, that I put myself in. So I believe everything will ultimately be worth it.
Yeah.
And I also believe that it is going to be a great experience. It's not going to be easy, but it will be worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. No one says it's going to be easy. You know, love that. So Kyle, tell us, where can our listeners find out more about you and all the great work that you're doing?
Yeah, the most active platform that I'm on is Instagram, as far as talking back and forth with people. So if your listeners just want to DM me Unyielded, I'll know that they came from the show and I would love to have a conversation.
Nice. Awesome. That'd be terrific. Well, I hope people reach out, they check out what you're doing. Yeah, great story and just great work that you're doing. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Bobby. This has been an absolute pleasure.
Good. Good deal. I hope that you could feel Kyle's enthusiasm and passion for what he's been called to do. Here are my three insights for thriving. Number one, I really liked the five pillars that Kyle talked about: calling, heart, altitude, mindset, and performance. He spoke about calling as that overarching thing that drives us and how sometimes our assignments may change, but the calling remains the same. And he also talked about heart being the hardest thing for people because it is typically the thing that they have neglected the most and for the longest period of time, and that it can be really hard to give ourselves permission to take care of ourselves. And if we don't give ourselves that permission, it becomes really hard for us to take care of others. Insight number two, define your championship run, which is essentially the dash between the two dates on your tombstone. What do you want it to be? And number three, beware of the cages that we willingly walk into. And I wonder, how many times do we willingly walk into the cage without even realizing that it's a cage? Thanks for tuning in and listening to this episode. I hope that Kyle's story reveals that we can always change our narrative and that we are not stuck by prior decisions. That's one of my fundamental truths, that the future can be changed. And that means we can thrive no matter what.